Hey guys, welcome to Hope It Helps. Today's guest is Jay Abo. Jay is an award-winning singer and songwriter in Dubai's blossoming music scene, establishing himself as one of the most exciting new acts in the UAE. He competed on The Voice back in 2019, and from there his music career skyrocketed, earning him the award for Best Original Act, a top 3 spot on the regional iTunes charts, and holding multiple residencies in some of Dubai's hottest locations. During this episode, we discuss how his music career started, we talk about the challenges of evolving as an artist, the secrets to his songwriting process, and the evolution of the music scene in the UAE. And the last message he wanted to share is stop thinking and start acting. Please join me in welcoming to the show, Mr. Jay Abo.
Thank you so much, bro. It's so good to see you doing this. So good to be on the show.
Yeah, it's about time. It's about time. It's a couple of years in the making, but alhamdulillah, like we're here now. It's all good. Guys, just to give you some context. So I've known JP for a very, very long time, you know, back from uni days, even in school we were together. And I've seen his music career from when it started, you know, those gigs at the stuff he used to do. You know what came to my mind? I remember Festival City. It'd be outdoor, small stage. It'd be me, you, Basil, Yasmin.
How do you remember Festival City? That's crazy.
Yeah, bro. Like those days.
That was one of my first, I think that was 15 when we did Festival City.
Something like
15,
that.
16.
Yeah, yeah.
It was through the Fridge, this company that I still work with today.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Worked with
them for more than half my life now. Wow. Now that I think about it.
That's crazy. Yeah. So to see where it started and now what you're doing is, I'm so proud of what you've done, because I know this is obviously from day one, this was the dream, to be able to live my life doing what I love, which is what you've been able to do now.
Exactly.
But for people who don't know you, why don't you give us all a little bit of background about yourself, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, for sure. So I'll start from when I moved to Dubai, I guess. I came to Dubai when I was 6-7 years old. Went to school here, went to university here, single mom, so she wanted us close by. And studied finance at university with you. I don't know if I would say studied.
Well, that's what the paper says.
We observed finance.
We observed finance. For sure.
Being taught in university and the VOP. And then I did nothing with it. I graduated. Actually, if I'm being completely honest, every time someone asks me, I say I graduated finance, but my GPA was so low in the last semester that they're like, listen, if you want to graduate, you have to just forego the finance and just say that you're general business.
Really?
Yeah.
So they just remove that? They just removed it.
They're like, we remove finance, you graduate.
Sign me up, we remove the specialty.
You have no specialty.
That's fine.
You know business.
I'm like, that's fine.
That's fine. I do know business.
Yeah.
And I got out and I graduated and, that it was around the same time. Obviously, I had been doing music before. I was if we're going into the music history, I started playing guitar in high school. I started playing guitar when I was 10, but I started playing guitar for people performing in high school, around high school.
Since I've known you, you've always been a singer and a musician. I've known you, even back in those school days.
I started singing when I was 14, 15 in school. Mm-mm. But before that, it was only guitar for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And I would I just always wanted to learn these show-offy pieces. So it was always I want to show people I'm good. There was a couple. I met someone, a friend, Nadeem Rifai,
Shout out, Nadeem.
You remember Nadeem?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I haven't seen him in years. You know, he's a dad now. He has 2 kids, or 1 kid and 1 on the way.
No,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
bro.
Life.
We're fucking old.
It doesn't feel like that long ago.
It doesn't. It really doesn't.
I used to go to Nadeem's house, and he would encourage me, and he would learn how to produce and record and whatever, and we would make little videos, and then at some point, we had been uploading videos to YouTube, and one of them did quite well. You remember Stereo Love?
Oh my God, yeah.
You remember when we went to when he came to Dubai and yeah, we went and saw him? And I was like, I'm the guy, bro.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, sign up.
Bro, he played that one song.
Four times.
Four or five times.
And then all his other songs.
Oh, yeah.
I want to see you fly, don't you get it to die. I don't know the lyrics, but it's just like Eastern European woman.
Yeah.
It's the style of the lyrics. And that got a bit of traction. Mm. And then at that point, honestly, if I just kept doing that for a while, I don't know why I'm saying this now, but like I think about it sometimes. If I stayed on that like YouTube path, you know, I think I would have done really well. But, you know, life got in the way. I was always a good boy till I was like 17, 18, mm-hmm. and then you corrupted me.
I just help people, bro. Yeah, just I have deny, no idea what yeah, you're talking
deny,
about.
Deny. Yeah, yeah. The world corrupted me.
Yes, that's better. Thank you.
And I just, you know, just started being like a bit irresponsible, a bit crazy.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
And I still loved music, still did music, still performed music, was still writing songs. But I wasn't like, oh, this is my life energy and force, and this is what I have to do all day, all the time. Anyway, skip back to after university, and, sure. and I've done this business nothing degree.
Okay.
And I went through like a really, literally like through like in the time, in the period that I was graduating or doing my finals for that last semester, like something really shitty happened, and I hit like rock bottom,
mm-hmm.
and I decided like khalas, like I want to turn my life around. I wrote things down, like I literally wrote things down on a piece of paper, and I started going to a therapist at the time. And you remember I was extremely overweight, I was like 100 something kilos. I went to a therapist, started boxing, started talking my problems out, and I decided to know I'm going to pursue this music thing as much as I can. And at the time, like my mom was like, find a job, just find something, you know, you can still do music, which is true. I could have done music.
True,
I
true.
Could have still done music, true. But I was like, no, just give me, I said to her, give me 6 months. And if I'm not making the same as my friends who are in corporate jobs, I'll stop and I'll get a corporate job,
okay.
which is a fair deal.
Yeah, that's fair.
So she gave me 6 months. I started going to all these open mics, started going around town, you know, trying to make a name for myself, started gaining a bit of traction. And yeah, within maybe not 6 months, but within, I think, a year of doing that, I got my first big gig. Mm. Well, while I was doing that, I got my first residency, Stereo Arcade.
Yeah.
Residency means I play mm-hmm. once a week and mm-hmm. there's a contract. I played there for 3 months and I'm like, wow, I have my own night and I'm getting paid for it. I'm on a monthly basis. It was amazing. And then that summer, I think it was summer of 2017,
mm.
I got my first big gig, which was Iris, in a band setting. And that was like crazy.
The
funnest nights of my life.
For sure, for sure.
Just everyone going crazy, you know.
And you're doing it with people.
Which
is pretty cool.
And one of the people was like, in that time, becoming my best friend.
Okay, so.
Colin, I don't know if you know Colin. He's like a white guy I always post.
I've probably seen him in like the hat, things.
Like, yeah. Anyway, I'll show him to you in a bit. He was the drummer, and he's also now my producer and kind of like one of my many guiding lights. Mm. You know.
Yeah.
Because I feel like sometimes like I really need the people around me to believe in me, because I'm not very good at believing in myself, or sometimes I forget. I mean, don't get me wrong. Sometimes I do something and I'm like, I'm the shit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but then other days I'm like, this is like, maybe.
You doubt yourself.
Yeah.
Which I think is normal.
Yeah.
It really is.
And yeah, after that, after Iris, like the gigs started coming in, the privates started coming in. I had a steady income. I was, the second year of doing it, I was making more than my friends in corporate jobs were making.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, my mom was like,
bringing
in the bread.
You've proven it. Yeah. You know? I believe it. Yeah.
The smile on her face every time I would like go home and give her some money to help out with the bills or the house or whatever.
Yeah.
Was really nice. And also the feeling of like
being able to like support. Yeah.
From, I don't know. Like, you know,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
pretty crazy.
It's sick. Yeah.
And yeah, since then, like, just started progressing more and more. I got bigger gigs, better gigs. The people who I used to look up to and be like, oh, I hope I can be like him one day, like, became my friends. Mm. And
was there, sorry to interrupt you, but was, so it's, it sounds like the progression was steady. And then, but I think, well, for example, from my perspective, when I saw, like, you're on The Voice.
Yeah, I was going to get
that,
there.
That was like the, was that like a really big turning point, did you feel? Like, even though whatever the experience was, like, not just that, but what came after that?
Yeah, so I'll tell you everything. So
yeah, initially, yeah, give us the backstory of, like, The Voice and how it works. Yeah,
exactly. So initially, like, for 2 years before that, The Voice had been, like, contacting me, asking me to be on. And I was, like, younger, so I was like, fuck that shit, I don't want to do that. Like, that's not me, you know. Mm. I'm not a guy who's going to go and show off and sing a song with every note being a la, run, or, like, you know, like, it's not me. You know, sure. You know me. I'm like John Mayer, you know. Yes. I like writing a good song. Mm. I like singing well.
Yeah.
But I'm not that, like, The Voice person. And it just felt cheap.
Yeah, it didn't feel authentic to you. Yeah.
But I was young, and that was stupid. That was stupid, because, like, someone's telling you, be on TV on one of the biggest shows in the world, can't be anything but good for you.
Yeah.
You know, really.
Yeah. Regardless.
If you have the right mindset, can be nothing but good.
Yeah.
So, on the third time they asked me in early 2018, I'm so surprised that I'm remembering, like, years. I'm usually bad at knowing when things happen. Mu'in, our friend,
mm-hmm, yeah,
who runs another podcast, Saturday.
Yeah,
he worked.
He's been killing it, man.
He's
good,
really
for him.
Killing.
Really respect.
Yeah, yeah, he's amazing, man. I remember when he first. When he first started, I was like, nah, yeah, bro, I like it, but, like, I wouldn't watch it.
Yeah, dude, fair.
And
fair
then,
feedback.
And now, I mean, you know, I'll watch the episodes where the guests interest me.
But that's podcasts.
And every time I see him, I see an episode or I see a post, I'm yeah, like, man, that's my friend.
Yeah,
look
yeah,
how
yeah,
far he made it. Like, this is his career now.
Exactly.
But yeah, Mu'in was working with a company called Talpa, and they were sort of like, working a little bit with, well, they were the company that owned The Voice, but he was working sort of in a different capacity, in like the marketing or
okay,
the social media or the activation, like the interaction between the audience and the, I'm not sure, I might be talking shit.
Sure, sure.
But he worked there, and he's like, bro, you have to do it, man. Come on, just do it. Just audition, man. What are you going to lose, you know? And honestly, he convinced me. And thank God he convinced me, and I thank him for that to this day, you know? Because not only was it a crazy, difficult, like, so difficult, but so beautiful as an experience, like, meeting all the people and being, and just seeing a bunch of, like, Arab, like, Lebanese and Jordanian and Palestinian and, like just guys sitting in a room, and I'm bimolo, like, ah, 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 I can't do it right. But, like, I was like, wow, I never saw, like, that never sounded good to me. But now I'm hearing these guys do it. It sounds amazing. So The Voice, man. Yeah, it was great. It was beautiful. You can ask me more questions about it in depth, about the things you're curious about. But definitely that was a huge turning point, because then I could, literally after that, since then until now, people ask me, clients or agency ask me for a promo video. Take The Voice.
Mm-mm.
Look where I was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know? And then
it's a big stamp of credibility.
It's a stamp of credibility, but also in a way, it's like me understanding that that's what matters to people.
Mm.
That's what matters to them. It's like, oh, he was on The Voice.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And every
yeah,
time I go to a new venue, like, someone will come up to me and be like, by the way, like, I saw you on The Voice. I
think oh, no did, way. That's
I think
sick.
You did great.
That's
you know?
Sick. That's
it's
sick.
Very nice. And yeah. I love it so much. But, like, I'm a bit, like, it's bittersweet to me, because, like, I wish that I didn't need a big machine like The Voice for people to be like, this guy's really good.
Ah, that's really interesting that you say that. That's really interesting that you say
that. Yeah, but that's also like a kind of a neurotic way of looking at it. But I am a neurotic person, Shui.
But I do resonate with that, you know, a lot. Until only very recently, I was always similar to you. It sounded like you wanted your music to be this, like, to... You don't want to use that machine. You want your music to speak for itself and get you that kind of audience.
Yeah,
I wanted the same thing with my podcast. That's been like the goal. But you realize, and like I think you've learned now with your experience on The Voice, and what I'm realizing is you have to put yourself out there.
Yeah,
like you have to market the 100%. Shit out of yourself.
And you got
to
do
what I mean?
Things. You got to do. Just
it's not comfortable for me either. But like you have to. I have to do it. You know what I mean? And I feel you share that.
Bro, 100%. Mm. And like this year, for example, I had two, this year and last year, I had two situations where like old me would have been like, that same feeling of the voice, you know? And one of them was voice acting for a kid's children's play that's like now ticketed at Virgin Megastores. And
so you're narrating it basically?
I'm the characters.
No way.
So, yeah, so this is how it happened.
So it's like some Pixar shit.
Not Pixar.
But like that's what you're doing though.
Animate it.
Yeah.
But right now it's just like plays, like, and they do it at children's schools, they do it at the malls, they do it at nurseries.
That's fucking cool.
It's really cool. And so basically they just play over my voice and the characters have memorized the lines. And so it all started with my two friends who are musicians, Leah Makhoul and Amin Najjar, great musicians.
Shout out, guys.
Producers, shout out. Told me that they needed someone with an American, who could do an American accent, to sing the songs.
Okay.
Just sing the songs.
Sure.
And I'm like, oh, what does the character sound like? And then they showed me a voiceover of this guy they were working with. I was like, I can do better than that.
Mm.
I don't even know why I said that, because it's not like I wanted to do it, you know? And they're like, try. And I was like, hey, kids, it's me, Mr. Kind. And they were like, oh my God, Jay. Oh my God, can you please be Mr. Kind? And I was like, yeah.
Sure.
I'll be Mr. Kind.
Yeah.
So then Haram, the other guy that they were working with, he was voicing another character also called Steve the Garbage Bin.
Okay.
Steve the Garbage Bin is hada ktir ma'attar, someone very, like a miserable guy who's scared of everything.
Or yeah.
Like a worry wart.
Yes.
You know? And I have like a friend in real life that you also know who's like such a worry wart, always down on himself.
Yeah.
Ramzi Rifai, shout out.
Shout out, Ramzi.
And like Ramzi has this vibe where he goes like, I don't know, man. What if we go there? So like I had that idea in my head and they're like, Steve the Garbage Bin. I'm like, I think I can do him too. And I was like, I don't know what to do. And that's it. All of a sudden I'm two characters and then I voice these characters. So that was one situation. Where it was something that I was very uncomfortable about. And honestly, I'm still like not really posting about it. So there's a part of me maybe that still feels a bit of shame.
I know. It's an insecurity, but I get that. I feel that a lot of the time too.
Sure.
So I understand exactly, you know, what you're talking about.
Exactly.
But that's so, but like those kind of opportunities are so sick. And for example, like the kids one's a really good example because now you're opening yourself up to like, okay, who's the guy like, exactly, that does his voices to a whole new market of like moms and like kids and like it's a whole new potential audience for you.
And it's also a whole new like learning path for me.
Because
you know that since I was a kid, like I love like imitating people.
Yeah.
Doing people accents. I don't know, man, I forgot.
yeah. That's a classic one.
So that is a classic one.
Yeah, it brings back lots of memories.
And we've barely scratched the surface. Yes, how much I can tell you.
Oh man, bro, I'm just getting memories of like the compound and stuff, man, when you say this shit.
Yeah, I was with Sammy like the other day. I actually see Sammy regularly now. Once a week he'll just come over, escape his life.
Shout out Sammy. Hope, yeah. Baby daddy.
Yeah, baby daddy. I hope Cara doesn't see this. Where you been, Sammy? Are you out with your friends?
It probably was. Probably was. So we were So the kids thing was one opportunity that you in the past wouldn't have done, but you did it, and now besides the learning path, you know, exposure to a new audience. What was this? You said there was one more thing that happened that you were not considering.
Yeah. So every Thursday now we do this thing. Well, it started. When I moved to Paramount, the first day, Lexi, the amazing artist and singer who I still live with, is introduced me to the creative director of Paramount, Nicholas Naeem.
Okay.
And they were at the time planning this thing. They do like a murder mystery. It's like an interactive musical theater thing where the performers sing songs in three acts, but in between the acts, they're in character doing improv with the audience, helping them solve the murder.
Interesting. Okay. Exactly. Okay. Interactive theater.
Interactive theater with a musical element.
Cool.
So Lexi and Naeem were talking, and Naeem's just like, I need to find someone for Adam's Family. It was September, so they were doing like the next show was an Adam's Family murder mystery.
Sick.
And I just looked at him and I'm like, I can be Fester. and, And he was like, are you a good singer? I was like,
bro, what is this question? You have just put up YouTube, show the resume.
I know, I didn't do that. He's like, come audition for me. And like a part of my ego was like, audition for me? Do you know where I've been?
I've performed in many places, yes.
Yes. The speakeasy of all places needs me to audition.
In terms of, yes.
But I went in and he asked me to sing Creep by Radiohead. And I killed it. And he was like,
Done.
And even I was like, ugh, I don't know, acting and being and like I have to act like an idiot, right? Fester, full costume, makeup, everything. Yeah, I'll show you a photo of me as Fester, and it's gonna be my Halloween costume forever.
100%, 100%.
So did that. Mm-hmm. It was amazing because I've always also wanted to, like, there's a part of me that's wanted to act, you know.
Yeah.
And man, you get. Just, you're on the floor just talking to people all night. So if there's anything that will teach you how to just be quick with conversation, you know, it's that, like, constant. And it's made me so much better than I was at talking to anyone.
Yeah.
And also taking risks while talking to people, which I think is so important, like showing a little quirky side of yourself, you know, making a joke, even if you've just met.
Yeah.
Things like that. But so, yeah, that's the second thing is the acting in the musical, the murder mysteries.
But all these different things, even when you're talking about the voiceover stuff, you don't know because you're a musician, you're a singer, but with those two like talents, you don't know what other avenues could be opened up. Like voiceover 100%. Stuff now could be something you consider. Okay, maybe I'll do that.
Exactly.
A little play here, a little play there. That could be something that you want to do. When you look back, like looking at where you are now, and if you look, remembering that kid at 15, playing in Festival City.
Yeah, who still had hair.
Long hair. Amen to that. Bro. It's okay.
It's okay.
Did you, is this what you always had envisioned, or do you feel like you've gone, at this point so far, gone further than you even would have expected back then?
So, no, if I'm being completely honest, when I was a kid at 15, I was like, well, by the time I'm 23, I'm going to be on, like, world stages and stuff.
Okay,
and
so you're like me. Yeah. I was going to be a DJ in Ibiza, That really worked out.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. It worked out for both of us. I'm on fucking Glastonbury, and you're at Pasha.
Exactly, yeah.
Resident at Pasha.
Yeah, amazing. Coming soon. Mm. And you're saying?
So there is that part where, like, that was the dream, but... You know, even then, like, I had my doubts that it would happen. And as you grow up, you get older, you have more and more doubts and you become more and more of a realist.
Yeah.
But then when I think about it now, actually, if I, like, and I know this is like a cliche, like little cutaway from every podcast that makes a clip of this. But if I had known
at
15 that I was like, playing the shows that I'm playing, like literally singing every week for a good paycheck, playing shows like Expo, being on The Voice, being friends with literally the people who I looked up to, like Anthony Tuma and Abri, and like these guys were like, oh my God, these are like the gods of the Dubai music scene. And like now I'm so lucky to call them friends.
Yeah.
And so just being in that peer group, sometimes I'm very like, I feel very humbled because I'm like, okay, so you did something, made something of yourself, you know, in Dubai, in music, like you've made something of yourself. So I'm very proud, but like there's definitely still way bigger aspirations. And honestly, I've been sleeping on that side of me because slowly in Dubai, sadly, you start, first of all, it gets to your head because Dubai is so small.
Mm.
So that when you get some sort of praise or recognition, it's very instant, and it makes you feel like, oh, that's it, I'm good now. And also you get sucked into like, wow, I'm making good money out of this, because nowhere pays musicians rates like in Dubai. Like in Lebanon you'd get $100 for a gig a night. That's like pretty normal,
and that would be like average there,
$100 average day. Here average 1500 dirhams.
It's like
almost five times the rate.
Yeah.
Of course, there are people who get paid more in Lebanon. There are people who get paid more here. There are people who get paid less here. But I'm just giving you
an
average number. A lot of gigging musicians in Lebanon get $100 a night. So the thing is, I got lost in this money thing. And I'm like, I want to make more money, because it kind of proved to me like, oh, I can make a lot of money doing music. So let me just full steam ahead. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What I was doing was I was ignoring, or I was actually like putting aside and burying what I really wanted to do, what my mission statement in life I know is, mm-hmm. is to write songs and put them out to the world, you know? And you've heard all my old songs. Mm-hmm. Where are they? Have they made it into the light? Maybe one of them.
Yeah.
Right? Wait For Me made it. And, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, I was 16, 17 at the time. And I feel like now I'm 31 and I have two or three songs out in the world. Two or three songs. And I've been doing music for 10 years.
Yeah. But to produce something's the quality wrong. Of songs that you've released, you needed those 10 years to get to that.
You know what? Yes and no.
Okay.
Yes and no. Because there's people right now, and I know everyone's different. We all have a different path. But there's people right now who will start making music on their laptops, won't give a shit about really the result, of course. That's the big one, right? Do it because you love it, not because you want mm-hmm. other people to love you. And they just, bro, like Mac DeMarco, you know Mac DeMarco by any chance?
No.
I'll send you some songs.
Okay.
Amazing artist. Just released like a 190 song album.
190?
Everything he had that he didn't release, just put it out. It's like a 9-hour album or a 4-hour album.
What?
I'm not sure. But yeah. So I think now the move is bulk instead of like refined, perfect quality.
Mm.
Although there's still like a standard. And like I won't let
exactly yes
like there's a level that I won't let a song from me be lower than
exactly, you know? Yeah,
so yeah, it does take me time. I'm on the way. For the past year my MO like has been just work on releasing the songs and writing the songs.
Yeah.
And I still shy away from it sometimes. I'd rather work out, bro. I'd rather go to the gym than sit down and write a song. It's the biggest fear I have,
yeah,
is to sit down and write, because you know what if I don't write one as good as the last one? What if the last one was the last one I had?
Mm.
You know, where I don't even know where they're coming from.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Yeah, true.
And so there's always that fear, and I'm literally working so hard to fight it, like actively working to fight it. What helps the most is being around other people, other creative people, even if they're not doing anything. Even just having another person in the room sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think like what it is in my blood, like why I do this,
yeah,
is of course I love music, but if I really look deep in, it's for the bravo.
Mm, yeah, that validation. Yeah,
the validation.
Sure.
You know,
but look,
and
we
that's
all
not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing, and we all want I always say there's levels to this game. Like yes, you want validation for your music, just as I want validation, you know, for this podcast. We both do it because we love it, but it would be lying to say that is not a significant aspect of
exactly.
that. You know what I mean? So 100%. That's not keeping it real here. We keep it real and hope it helps, guys.
Yeah.
So interesting. You talked about what you love doing is songwriting, and you love singing as well. So I've spoken to some producers on the podcast before, and we were talking about the songwriting process. I know each artist has their own and so on. And one of them was like, okay, I start with the emotion first that I want to create, and then I build the song out of it. And other people will say, no, we just start doing things, and the emotion kind of comes through our, you know, our brainstorming or our riffing. So in your experience, what would you say for you personally, what comes first usually? Is it, I want to create a song, a sad song, and this is how I'm going to do this, I'll build towards that? Or let's play around depending on your energy, what you're feeling that day, you know, what you're looking to produce, and through, you know, the brainstorming with your team and so on, something comes up, you're like, oh, I like that. Okay, that's what the emotion of the song is going to be.
So for me, it happens like all of those ways. Sometimes it's like this, sometimes it's like that.
Okay.
But most usually what will happen is, and this is the part that's kind of like, I can't explain, like it's kind of like vague and it makes me want to be more spiritual.
Okay.
But like, for example, I have this song called All I Think About Is You. And when I was living at IMADS, I would wake up every morning and I would just have in my head, for no reason, All I Think About Is You, all the time. Da-da-da, da-da-da. Every day, bro, I would wake up and I would tell myself, I'm not writing that song, that's so lame.
Mm, yeah.
Oh, that's so cheese, I'm not writing that song. And I'm like, is that another song? Where is it from? I don't know. So then I sat down and I'm like, well, I had it in my head for like 3 weeks. One night I go to Colin's, we're having a couple of drinks, and I'm like, Colin, like, what do you think of this? All I think about is you, all the time, all the while. You were bending, bending, something, and new, all the time, all the fly. And he's like, yeah, bro, that's fire. Let's fucking record that right now. And we record it, and then that same night we recorded those parts, and I'm like, we need a chorus, you know? And the chorus has to be as obvious and like cheese but not cheese as those verses. And so I'm on the way home, and literally like I get the chorus. It's like, last night when I was high, I thought I saw you in the sky. You looked so perfect, I could die. Still don't know why. All I think about is you all the time, all the while. I was waiting on some kind of fucking clue, or a sign, or a smile, with some other motherfucking dude, or a girl, or a fly.
Or a fly.
Still, all I think about is you. So yeah. Okay. So like, usually what I'm saying is like, usually I'll have like one thing and then I extrapolate forward and back.
Okay, gotcha.
But I follow that one thing.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it's just that I'll be playing something on the guitar and something just hits, like something resonates and then I follow that.
Yeah.
You know? And sometimes it leads nowhere, or sometimes you do half a project and your mind alone will forget about it if it's not meant to be. I feel like if something is going to be good, you can't get rid of it.
That's a good guiding thing for you.
It is.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. Is it
It's gut feeling. It's intuition.
It experience?
Yeah, absolutely.
God? I don't know, bro.
Yeah.
I don't know. But like, that's usually how it
is. No, for sure. And I know like for when it comes to music, when it comes to art, there's an intuitive thing that comes. Even that's a great example of what you're talking about, because it came to you. You don't know from where, how, it's just this thing in your head. And it just... That's the magic.
Yeah.
You know, that's the intuition. That's the gut. That's, you can call it whatever you want.
Yeah, inspiration.
Inspiration. There you go. And growing up, you know how growing up, so you're doing guitar for a few years and then you started singing. What made you decide? Because you know when people, especially when you start and especially at that age, your friends and family are going to be like, unless you're like terrible, no matter what, they're going to be like, yeah, you know, you're great. What made you decide to sing? And was there a certain event that gave you the validation that like, oh, not just my friends who are saying that, because you genuinely are a good singer, but the outside, you know, that next layer that gave you like, all right, I must be decent at least.
Yeah. So this is the first time that I will tell this in this much detail about. Sorry, I'm just going to grab my vape, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Out of frame for a second.
Yeah. Get comfortable.
So, I played guitar. I used to play all these like really show-offy pieces. And not learn theory and not learn notes and not learn the stuff that I should have learned, the right progression. And like I said, it was always about like impressing people. And then one day I was at my uncle's house and his cousin Wadir was there. And he's like, Jay, why don't you try singing, man? Like, you would sound so good at singing. Like, I think you'd have a great voice. You have a great speaking voice. And at the same time, there was a girl, a friend in school, Divya. You remember Divya?
Yeah, I do.
She was like, Jay, she would tell me all the time, like, Jay, can you sing Apologize by One Republic? And I'm like, I don't even know that song. So I got familiar with the song. And that day that Wadia said, can you sing? And I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to try that song right now. And I sang it. And if I remember correctly, like, it sounded good for someone who's opening his mouth to sing for the first time. It was good.
Yeah.
It wasn't amazing, but it was good. And I did it a couple times, and it slowly just started becoming part of my life, like 14, 15, 16, I just started singing. And I think because I was obsessed with the guitar and then singing and songwriting, I had been playing guitar and singing slightly for that whole year. And then that summer, my cousin's... I had my cousin Jessica came to Dubai from Canada, and she was like, have you heard of John Mayer? I'm like, no, who the fuck's that?
You said who the fuck is
John
Mayer?
I was like, who's John Mayer? Yeah.
Wow, knowing you from that age, bro, I would be like JP crazy? John Mayer. Like that would be the association. Yeah.
And I was like, I was in that's nuts. I think I was in grade 9, 15 when that happened. And she was like, how do you not know John Mayer? Like, he's amazing. You would love him. At the time, we had LimeWire and stuff. So I downloaded everything that we had from LimeWire. There was 3 songs by him that were available on LimeWire. The one called Daughters. I don't know if you know it. And then there was a cover that he did for Cars, the Pixar movie, of the song Route 66. Get your kicks on Route 66. And he'll play this crazy shreddy guitar solo. I'm like, who the fuck's this guy who's singing in a way that I can achieve? He's not like, yeah. He's just singing in a way like a guy who's talking, singing, you know, and he's got beautiful tone. I'm like, I can do that.
Mm-hmm. Sorry about the mic. No worries.
I can do that. And then Daughters, loved it as well. You know, I would sing it along. And I slowly became, I went to Virgin Megastore. And I remember there was a girl who we also knew. Rend, you remember Rend?
Oh my god, yeah. And these names, bro.
It's crazy, these names. We're just pulling them out.
Really, yeah. I haven't thought about a lot of these people in like
neither,
10
by the
years,
way, neither have I. It's just because I'm bringing out these stories that I'm remembering. Yeah. Like visually, she was at Virgin Megastore.
Yeah.
And she's like, what are you doing? And I was like, we were next to the albums. So I'm like, shopping for music. And she was like, oh yeah, who are you going to buy? I'm buying a Black Keys album. The first thing that came to mind, I was like, John Mayer. So then I just like went to the John Mayer section, and there was a CD Continuum, and it was the first one there, and I liked the cover of it. I bought it. Little did I know that was it. That to this day even is what all John Mayer fans see as his magnum opus, like a masterpiece, masterwork of an album.
Interesting.
Every song is gorgeous in every single way. It's a perfect album, and that's when the obsession really started.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm like, what? This guy can do no wrong.
Mm-mm.
And then I think I decided, I'm like, you know what? I think I want to write songs. And I wrote a couple songs. I wrote like one called War Inside. That was my first song ever. War Inside, about my grandfather who had cancer, lung cancer at the time. So I'm like, okay, there's a war inside of him, you know? Did it at an open mic here. This was before like anything was really happening for me. And I just started writing songs since then, and slowly, like, because I was the guy who was a guitarist first and then became like a singer-songwriter, and then like finding out about John Mayer, he has the exact same story. He just wanted to be a guitarist, and he was a good songwriter, and he couldn't pay anyone to sing his songs, so he's like, I'll sing them myself.
Yeah.
And you know, his first hits were all pop hits, so he did what he thought would work with the label he was with, and then by his third album he's like, all right, everyone loves me, I'm gonna do me now.
Carlos,
yeah
I have the numbers.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna do whatever I want. He had a cult following, huge following, you know. But yeah, that's how I started singing.
Okay, interesting. I didn't know that, because since I've known you, as I said earlier, like, I know you play the guitar, but I've always associated you as a singer first, then a guitar player. Because I think it's the singing that is, because there's a lot of great guitar players.
I would say now I am.
The singing is what makes you stand out. That's what makes you unique. You know what I mean?
I would say now I'm more of a singer than a guitarist.
Okay. Now you feel that way.
Now I feel that way. Okay. Because my singing has improved a lot since then. And although there are still people who are out-sing the shit out of me here, but I'm very lucky and blessed, like, is in the fact that, so what I tell people sometimes is, like, I don't think I'm a good singer, I just think I'm a really good imitator. And so because I can do voices, I can mimic the voice of a good singer, and which is, it's basically singing well.
Exactly, yeah.
But I always felt like I have a lot of control over how to shape the tone in my voice. Mm. And I think that's the big selling point for me. Like, that's why I get a lot of gigs, is the tone.
Exactly, yeah.
You know? Because there are people who can technically outsing me, but the tone.
But I've always thought you have it's a very soothing tone. You know what I mean? It sounds very like calm.
Easy listening.
There you go. You said it perfectly. Easy listening. So I know now you probably have like, if I think of you and like your music, you have like that sound. You have that thing that makes you stand out. But when you were starting out with like the John Mayer, I know how you assess where you, when you start out, you emulate the people you love.
100%.
Like as a guitar and as singing. So how do you go from that, and then how did you find, if you were to describe like your style, what would the Jay Abo style be?
So I would say like I definitely, the biggest factor in the tone of my voice is John.
Okay.
Right? So that was my influence. And then for some reason, what I've realized today is that my voice right now is kind of a mixture of like John Mayer, and then there's some lines that I'll sing in like a kind of like a crooner way, like a Bublé-esque.
Yeah.
Well, we know how much you love Michael Bublé.
That's my guy.
But he was never so that amazing to me. But something about the way he sings was...
His voice is like exactly, honey, bro. It's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. Voila. It's so just like, you know... I'm trying to think of
and
that.
And his voice, in your eyes.
Yeah.
He's so good, bro.
I'm trying to remember this line that's just so funny, the way he says it. Birds, like, you know when he goes like, birds flying high. He's got that really cool. So I feel like it's a mixture of that,
okay,
a bit of Bublé, and then whatever the rest is me.
Is you. Okay, yeah.
Stylistically, like musically speaking, a lot of people go like, every time I go out, like there's one person who requests a John Mayer song. They see it in me. They see the John Mayer in me. Okay. That bothers me a bit because I'm like, but I'm different, you know?
I'm me. Yeah.
And so with the songs that I'm writing now that are coming out, they're not John Mayer. John Mayer wouldn't write those songs, you know? They're my songs. And
And
I really think that now as I'm putting them out, people are going to see that. And then that will really be me going like... Khalas, this is who I am. This is what my sound is.
And I've always felt you have like a, besides like those two, you've always had like that blues influence.
Yeah.
You've always liked that, you know, even some of the older stuff you made had that like, you know, it's like, it's vibey. It's vibey. I think that's the way I describe it. And as a musician, because it's something so personal, not only from a songwriting perspective, because it might be based on something that's going on in your life, even, you know, your voice, since it's very artistic, I can imagine... Like sometimes certain feedback and criticism could be like very hard to take because it feels quite personal. So I'm curious what has been your experience with that? Like how have you managed, you know, receiving that criticism, positive or negative? And what would you advise to up and coming artists on like how should they, you know, approach it?
So to be honest,
yeah,
and I hope I don't sound like a total dick when I say this.
Okay.
I wish I had more criticism in Dubai. But like everyone was always like, you're doing great. Like if they were to criticize me, it would be more about my work ethic and my flakiness and you know, being late. Like I was late today. You know, I was just like, I'm much better at it now.
Yeah.
But it's more like prep stuff, you know. But it was never. I've never gotten a like, you should really fix this about your songwriting. Maybe you should look at that with your voice. Never got any of it. So I wish that I was in an environment where there were people who were just shitting on me more, because I feel like I would have, you know, done things different or progressed differently or tried harder. Because in the last few years, I've just felt like I've been kind of, okay, this works. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
Just go sing the songs, do the loop. They love it anywhere I go. And that's kind of made me like, there was this Chris Williamson thing where he was saying like, it's much better for a thing to be really bad than to just be kind of bad. Because when it's kind of bad, you can stick with it.
You can live with it,
you know?
Actually, that's a really interesting point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I realized that like, okay, now I'm just comfortable doing this and it's too easy. So these days, like what I'm trying to do is like up my live set, trying to make it different, trying to add new elements, trying to add songs that I'm passionate about instead of just songs that I know people will love.
Yeah. And on that point about songs that people will love and so on, and you hear this a lot of artists that we grew up like loving. The one who comes to mind the most for me is like Kanye. Like Kanye's early albums, like Graduation, like that, bro,
man,
like
Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy was like our soundtrack, bro, on the road.
Yes, unbelievable. But obviously as an artist, your music taste evolves, you want to try new things. So then there's that whole debate, because if I'm a fan of yours, I became a fan of yours for a certain thing you produced, right? Yeah. So now I like you because you do that and I like what you've done. But you as an artist now want to evolve and change into that, into a different, you know, genre and so on. And so for me, Kanye is a great example because like his later stuff, I'm like, what happened to you? Like, why? You know what I mean? Mm. And I think it's a struggle that you must have as an artist. Like, what do I do? Do I do this for me? And like the real ones will stay. But also the fan base I've built is because I did this.
Yeah.
So now they might have an expectation to do that. So when it comes to managing that, I can imagine that's can be quite challenging sometimes because you don't know what, because there isn't a right answer, you know?
So the thing is, I can't really be a case study in this question because I've not released so much music that people are like, that's what he does.
Okay.
To be fair, like my first song that I released recently in my recent releases is Moonbound.
And yeah.
Moonbound is like a soft, folky, guitar-driven road trip song.
Yeah.
You know? And then I just dropped like a pop rock, alternative rock song called Change Tomorrow.
Change Tomorrow, yeah.
And then the next one is also kind of pop rocky. It's called ADD. And then the one after that is funk. And then the one after that, All I Think About Is You, is going to be like two releases away from now. That's going to be like total full on pop. Mm. So I'm just doing whatever the fuck I want. And every song is different. And I think that's just like my thing is just like I like to do a bit of everything.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
So maybe when I have a cohesive full project like an album or an EP and that, because that is going to have like a more
there's like more of a theme to it.
Yeah, a more analogous like sound to the whole thing.
Sure.
So maybe when I do one of those, then I might experience what that is, but for now, like, dude, everything I'm putting out is different, and it's even like a different persona, kind of. Like Change Tomorrow is like a pining, like rock, like, you know, rock power ballad, and then I have one coming out which is more like I'm like, you know, hit, like I don't give a fuck,
yeah
like hip-hop style kind
sure
of.
Sure.
Even All I Think About Is You, just like the way I'm singing All I Think About Is You is I'm trying not to sing it.
You're trying to speak.
I'm just trying to be like, oh, I think I'm telling you, you.
I'm telling you a story, basically. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, so yeah, it's yeah. Like right now I'm really experimenting with like lack of effort.
J. Cole does that incredibly well. You know, like he tells you so a story, good. But he's rapping, but it's I'm talking to you.
Yeah. But and he has the perfect dynamics.
Exactly. Yeah, so good. Exactly. And so now you've played, I know, so many different like stages and different audiences and different sizes. Do you still feel nervous when you go up? And does the size of the stage affect that?
The size of this, that's such a good question, by the way. The size of the stage, does it affect it? So far, the most nerves I've had was at my expo show, because that's the biggest stage I've played.
Okay.
But the thing is, like, what I get worried about in those shows is the just the variable, the unknown variable of like, how is my monitor mix going to be? Like, my monitor mix is how I hear myself. How's my monitor mix going to be? Am I going to sound too low? So it's always like a technical thing. If I hear myself well, I'm never worried.
Okay.
Like, if my monitor mix is good, wherever I play, and I know what I'm going to play, I'm never worried. I'm more worried when they like, when it's like, for example, a private event for a luxury brand. And then, you know, they put me there because they have a certain idea of what the guests are going to feel when they see me. And then it's like, I don't know what role I'm playing. Am I Jay Abo, like that, and you brought me for my music, or am I background music?
Like a piece.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
A Dubai, like, well, of course we've got a singer. Of course we've got live entertainment. We've got a harpist falling from the roof in a bubble. You know, like,
it's
Dubai, so.
It is Dubai. It's very Dubai.
But the big stages, I'm just nervous about technicalities. I'm not, but that is when I play the best. On a big stage, like at Expo, eyes open, staring at the crowd, like attitude, jumping.
That energy.
Energy, you know? And you only get that like on a big stage with people who are there to watch you, and you're doing your thing, your music, what you love.
Yeah. And I think what we touched on this earlier, you know, that debate about, because in those kind of private events, you're limited, and do you feel like you're genuinely there because they like you, or are you just a piece compared to, you know, like the Jubilee stage where, no, you know that you've been brought to play for this. So like everyone's here to appreciate your music, exactly. Not necessarily, you know, you're just there making exactly. it sound nice.
Exactly.
But I think I feel it's an artistic versus business challenge. Because those private events, you know what I mean?
They pay well.
You know, so like on one side, you're like, why not? But like then creatively, you're like,
yeah.
But this is not me. This is not what I want to do. But I think you have to find that balance. I think it's something you learn as what you're doing, right?
I am doing it. And it's, you know what? It's fine. I don't mind being background.
Yeah.
Sometimes I like being a wallflower, just like, you know, being just the soundtrack to people's schmoozing and mingling and getting to know each other and, you know, posting stories and whatever. And also it's good for me. It's good for me to be, you know, next to a brand, doing a brand thing.
Do you feel, as we touched on this a little bit earlier, you mentioned like it slightly, but you mentioned as like there was a point that maybe all of this kind of got to your head a little bit, which I think it would for a lot of people when you're recognized for a name and everyone's there clapping, you know, psychologically you're going to be like, oh, I'm the best, I'm the shit. But as the fame grows, as your profile grows, do you find it now, have you had experiences that you're learning? Is it harder to trust people? Because is this guy being nice to me and hanging out with me because of the exposure I have and who I am, or is this genuinely a person that like cares about me?
I don't think I'm at the level where people are like want to be around me because of my exposure, but like
to a certain extent,
I'll give you the exact extent. But like, you know, there are some people who I feel like are nice to me or hang or
kissing your ass
hang around me because they want gigs, because it's musicians mostly because they want work and I can to a certain extent like help with gigs because I have a good network and I have a few nights that I run as opposed to just singing. So maybe just for that.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, I like to think like I have a really, really good relationship with pretty much everyone in the community. Like I try, even if there's someone that I personally don't like. Which is normal.
Of course.
There's people I don't like.
Yeah.
You know, I will still be kind to them and treat them as a friend.
Yeah.
And because I think like the more important thing is the community as a whole.
Yeah. You know?
It's for all of us to be supporting each other. Mm. That's how all the greatest scenes make it. Like in Seattle with the grunge scene, it was a community, you know?
That's how like just people supporting each other, and that's how it kind of starts, right?
You create a scene because you can't, like it's very hard to create it unless you're a label with millions of dollars to create a phenomenon or an icon out of one person. That takes a machine and it takes money.
Yeah.
And it takes a really good looking, really charismatic, really talented person.
Yeah.
Whereas a scene, khalas, if all the musicians are talking about all the musicians, then all the people who are watching all the musicians are also talking about all the musicians.
Yeah. It has its own life, basically.
Yeah, it does.
So on that point, and you've touched on the community part a few times in the conversation. If I'm looking at how you got to where you are compared to now a new artist entering the music scene in Dubai, I feel now it's a lot more developed for sure compared to like your time. And maybe there's more of, do you see now there's more opportunities and more of a career path for artists, or is it now even harder than it was, for example, in your experience? Because you kind of got into it like as the scene like was building even back in the day, like there wasn't really a scene here.
Yeah.
I feel now there maybe kind of is. I'm not in it, so you can tell me better.
There kind of is. There was. So definitely the open mic scene, so the up and coming scene, people coming up.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the peak back then, 2016, 2017, 2015.
Okay.
Like Abo, a friend of mine who doesn't live here anymore, was running the open mic, and he was doing it with like such beautiful intention, such a good heart, such a good soul. He wanted everyone to learn, to get an opportunity to perform and like to become better, and to maybe fail in front of a crowd. You know, they say that about stand-up, but it's also true for music. Like, you got to bomb sometimes to learn. And I think back then, that was like, wow. Like, you'd see new people every week, and they'd blow you out of the water. Whereas now, I think there's less of that happening. There's no
There's less of that now?
Yeah, there's not many open mics in town.
Okay, interesting.
I was just running one, and we advertised the shit out of it. We had a few good nights, but, you know, ultimately, we had to stop it this Wednesday because the summer, they're saying for the summer, I don't know if it'll go on after that, but just wasn't doing that well.
It's hard to get people it's hard. Especially really for hard. Like something like music, because that's very specific. It's a very taste oriented thing. You know, you're never going to find me in like a rock bar. It's just not going to happen. But you might find me in like an open mic, you know, maybe that's more of my crowd. Does it ever get, because every week you have residencies and you play lots of different gigs and so on. Does it ever feel like repetitive for you and you just get bored?
Of course, man.
Yeah? Because I can imagine it would be, because it's maybe the same song.
It is.
The same
it is. A lot of it is the same.
So how do you, what's your like thoughts about all that?
So I really went through this like last year,
okay.
more than this year, where I was like, oh my God, man. like, I hate this. Like, I hate going to every gig, singing the same songs. No one gives a shit. Man, there was, I remember, like, there was a night, like, I was playing this gig where it was always dead. Always dead. I used to call it Purgatory, that place. I'm not going to mention where it was.
Yeah, there's no names.
But, but like, I felt like I was in fucking limbo, bro.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know.
He's like, come on. Yeah.
I'm waiting for like my jiddu to come take me or some shit. I don't know. Okay. I actually got so emotional. I was like on the verge of tears, bro. I'm like, what am I doing? Like, what am I doing with my life? Like, this is what I'm doing, you know? And that's just a perspective thing. And at that point, like that day, maybe I was already low. Cause there's so many nights where I'm just like, something happened personal or I'm not in a good mood.
Yeah. Which is normal.
And I won't want to sing it. But now I see that as like, you're in a shitty mood and you don't want to sing. Let's see how good you can do it.
It's a challenge.
Yeah, for you, it's a challenge.
Like, when you do those, like those moments and the days you don't want to do it, whatever, the feeling after, regardless of how it went, which probably usually will go decently well, you feel insane.
Yeah, you're more proud,
you know, because you beat yourself.
Exactly.
You know, yeah.
On a bad night.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just like when you're sick and you still go to the gym.
There you go.
I'm such a champion. I'm such a fucking trooper.
100%.
So, and it was that. So like, you know, taking it as a challenge, facing it head on, being proud of yourself. And then the other side of the coin is like, bro, like you're getting the chance to just play your guitar and sing for 3 hours. Do whatever the fuck you want. Like I had it in my head, like I have to sing Sunday morning. I have to sing No Diggity. I have to sing. Blah, blah, blah. And then I realized like when I do more songs that I love, that I want, that not necessarily the crowd won't love, that's when I get the best reactions.
Exactly, because it feels authentic.
Exactly.
People know, man.
People, they can tell, bro.
Everyone can
An
tell.
An audience can tell better than you what's good or what's not. 100%. They decide anyway. John Mayer said that. He's like, you don't decide what song is a hit on the album. The audience decides.
True.
The audience is smarter than you in that regard.
Exactly, yeah.
You know?
And you're creating, you know, for them.
Exactly.
So I have a couple more questions, Habibi.
Yeah,
and let's start with this one. Looking back now at, you know, what you've done, looking at that, remembering that young artist, if he was here, you know, JP at 15, the guy in Festival City that we would watch, you know, stand, and it was us three watching you. What would your advice to him be now that you've gone through that experience? What would you have told him?
So you know how people say like, oh, I don't regret anything, like everything happened the way it was meant to, so that I could get you to this point here. Like, yeah, sure. But like, if I could give him advice, I would tell him to just like remember why you started loving this and like keep that feeling. Because distractions, whether I like to admit it or not, distractions really like took me off my path. And you know what I mean when I say that.
Yeah.
I would tell him to just like, this character that you are right now, like this person who makes people laugh, who likes to be like the life of the party. Remember, me and you were that together.
Sure, sure.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, put that in the music. Be that. Like, don't try to be someone else. Like, don't try to be John Mayer. Like, just be like JP. Like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, let J-Abo be JP, because that's. And I'm still trying to do that now. Like, trying to be funnier in my songs, because it's part of who I am. It's like, I can make people laugh. Yeah, man. I would just tell him to keep writing songs. I would just tell him to keep writing songs and to know that that's one of the most important things in your life.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. And I think I love what you said. Remember why you do this.
Yeah.
You know, let that guide you. And
because I forgot, bro. I forgot.
But it happens.
For a long time.
Yeah, I know. But it happens, bro. You know, like sometimes, you know, like I'm going to like downtown. But I fucked up. I took a right, and now I have to go around all this way. I'm still gonna get there, but like now it's just from a different way. You know what I'm saying? 100%. So now, do you feel like you've made it now? And if not, what would need to happen for you to feel that way?
I don't feel like I've made it. I feel like I've made a good career,
okay,
for sure. But made it? No, for me, made it is I'm playing my songs to huge audiences, or even it doesn't even have to be that specific anymore. You know, that was the big dream. But I just want the songwriting to be why people know me or appreciate me or respect me.
More than the singing?
More than the singing.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
Bro, it's what I'm best at. It's my secret weapon. It's my arsenal, you know, like that's what I have.
Mm.
And I've been told, like, it's not just me saying that. It's like, you know, whether it was Charlie or Colin or people, like people from that world, or even Jason Derulo.
Yeah.
You know, like Jason. So Jason Derulo, a quick story. I was running this event at Cove for original musicians to come sing, and it was not doing very well at the opening of the season. So I was like, on the next week, it was my birthday. So I'm like, I will invite literally everyone on my WhatsApp list mm-hmm. to come to my birthday, and we'll have this Grammy Award winning producer, this guy called Vincent Berry.
Okay.
Bro. Amazing guy. He's friends with the owner of Cove, so he would come by a few times. He wrote Sandcastles for Beyonce and won a Grammy for it off that album, Lemonade, I think it's called. And so we had him on a big screen and we were getting people up to sing in front of him, and he would like sort of
like comment. That's sick. That's really cool.
Yeah. And we did that, and Jason Derulo showed up because he's also friends with
Adil. Way.
And it was a crazy, crazy, crazy night. And I sang two of my songs that night. And literally while I'm in the middle of my set, I have like three waiters around me. Mr. Adil, Mr. Jason, they won't talk to you right now. I'm like, guys, I'm singing.
They're
like, no, come now, let someone else sing. So I go, and Jason looks at me and he's like, that song Changed Tomorrow, you wrote that? And I was like, yeah. He's like, that's your song? I'm like, yeah. I'm doing a really bad black accent, but whatever. He's like, that's your song? I'm like, yeah. He's like, hey, listen, man, like, you got that instinct. Like, you got that instinct. Mm-hmm. I really want to work with you. I want that song. I want to buy that song. And he said that he basically, like, really validated me, bro. Because, again, he's a person from that world
exactly.
saying you belong.
Who has done incredibly well.
Bro, Jason Derulo, there's not no one that does
yeah,
well.
Yes. Yeah, know? Exactly.
Oh, another funny story. Because he used to come a lot to Cove. We were doing these, sets. On the beach called Sundowners, and I went to sit with him and Adil afterwards, and Adil's always like such a happy guy, always like, you know, just he's like, Jason, you got any advice for Jay, like how can you help him, like what do you think about his performance? And Jason's like, I would just say like say your name more, and you know, like say,
like he
say
does
who
like
you are.
Like
Jason, and then we all realize at the same time, and then he's like, I can't believe that's the advice I just gave, oh my god. And then we all started laughing so much.
That's so funny.
Abbo. But
that's so funny.
It's so funny that
it's
that
so funny that
advice.
That's the advice,
and he realized, I know, like he caught himself.
That's hilarious.
It was so funny.
That's really funny. I can't believe this. I can't believe that was his advice, man.
But yeah, man. He and then I sang another song, and he's like, "You wrote that too, ADD." He's like, "Man, you really got that instinct. I want to work with you. Can you come?" He's like, "Can you come to LA this Saturday?"
I'm like, bro.
You're American.
How many planes do you want me to come with? I'm like, oh, Adi, don't worry.
Yeah, but like I told him, like, you know, I know you're American, but we have this thing called a visa.
Yeah, by the way.
And I'm Lebanese, so like I can come in 240 days. If you need me there.
If you still want to work with me in a couple of years, yeah, we'll do it. We'll get it done.
And I never followed it up because I wanted to release the song myself.
Sure.
I got what I needed from him.
Yeah.
And I think, like, khalas, after I got that, like, I've gotten it so many times, I still find it so hard to make that. Like, I should be eating, sleeping, living, breathing music every day. But I'll do, like, any other good thing, read, self-help, meditate, do workout, do myofascial release. I'll do all that, bro, and I'll find more things to avoid the main thing.
Yeah,
but now I'm like, obviously I'm working on songs and they're coming out.
Of course,
out. I'm slowly evolving in that regard.
I know, but bro, that everything you're saying is what I've been going through recently as well. You know, I'm making progress. It's not that I'm not making progress, but it's like if you just stopped like trying to like do things here and put that time here, it would be so much better.
I feel like if we just stopped like trying so hard,
yeah,
if you just let go of everything. Like when you put out that first video of the podcast and talking about insecurities,
yeah
I was like, that's it, he's got it now.
Yeah
Khalas, this is when this thing is going to start having wheels.
Yeah, inshallah, you know? I hope so.
And you needed the video format for it.
Yeah,
it's so
yeah,
important
100%
to see someone's face.
Yeah, yeah, nowadays even with like the clients I work with, I'm like, even if it's alone, whatever, video, it's just, we're in a video world now.
Yeah,
like it has to be that. It creates so much more engagement.
It does, man.
Them being able to see my reaction in talking to you adds something. Exactly. You know, it adds something to that, because then you feel like as if you're even you're more in involved. Exactly. Yeah, like, oh, yeah, my friend, I've seen people who look like
and
that.
And you know, bro, one thing I also realized is like, this is going to sound like such a cliche, but what you did and what I did and what a lot of other people didn't do is we kept going.
Mm-mm.
Even if it wasn't working sometimes, mm-hmm. even if it wasn't perfect, we didn't quit. And yeah. I know so many guys who like, they were good and they would have gotten where I am right now or even further if they just didn't stop doing it.
Yeah.
So this thick skin in the face of adversity and in the face of like struggle and in the face of like people cringing, and usually it's like your closest friends who you're scared of
the
showing
most
your shit
of course.
Bro, I will go be
course.
An idiot in front of a thousand strangers,
yeah, yeah.
You know, which is what I want to do, like more of. I want to be an idiot on TikTok. I want to post content. I want to do all that shit. But like, what stops me is like, Malik's gonna reply to this being like, bro, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Why?
I know
why.
I know that's exactly how I feel. Exactly. Yeah. I but look, it's something that I think you get better with time and that you work on. And, you know, I think we're both working on it, you know,
we are, man.
In that way.
We are.
Jay, I just have two more questions for you. These are questions I ask all my guests. Okay. So first of all, looking back either personally or professionally, if I ask you the question, what are you most proud of for yourself? What would you say?
I'm most proud of the people that I've made a part of my life. I'm most because if it wasn't for them, the songs wouldn't be out. If it wasn't for people, if it was just me alone autonomously doing this, I wouldn't get there. So I'm most proud of being a person who knows how to like show love and how to make people feel special and make them feel like listened to and cared for. And I just love people, bro. People is my passion more than music, I think.
Honestly, I love that. And there's a famous quote that I kind of, like, it just resonated with me so much. It was, friends are the family that you choose.
Yeah.
And like that, and you know, and it sounds like you, and even in my case, the people I have in my life, you know, they say your relationship, you want to measure someone's life, measure the value of your relationships. So if that's how you feel, I'm so happy for you, bro. Because it's the best feeling.
It is
the best feeling, because I feel it too. And for my last question, Mr. J. Abo, what is the message you'd like everyone to take home with them today?
The message I want everyone to take home is just embrace like the part of yourself that you think is going to put people off, and not only embrace it and just like flaunt it, because that's what makes you unique. That's what makes you.
Yeah.
I know it's been said a billion times, but that is it. Like, just be you, and more importantly than anything, like, the most important thing is like, stop thinking about how you know what you need to do to get better, or how you know, oh, I know what I need to do. I know I need to do this. I know I need to do that. I know I need to, you know, knowing is never enough. Just do the things and stop thinking about it.
Yeah.
Like, just do anything. And the hardest part is always like, I know it's been said, if I pick up the guitar, khalas, I'm good for half an hour. But to go and pick up that guitar,
that effort,
oh my God, how much that takes.
Yeah.
But when it's in my hands, I'm khalas. Good.
Exactly.
So just pick up the guitar, turn the TikTok on, put your tripod on the table, whatever it is, like, just do it and stop thinking about it so much. That's what I would say.
Man, I resonate with that. A lot. It's something that I've been, you know, going through as well. Like, exactly, you said it perfectly. You know, we all know what to do, but we just don't do it. And recently, and I think you're in the same boat, that now we're trying to start on the doing side more, you know, trying to do more things, even though we might get distracted a little bit. It's okay. We're still making progress. Jay, Habibi, I want to say,
and you know what?
Yeah,
honestly, this is going to be kind of out of nowhere, but like, exercise.
Well, yeah.
Just work out.
Yeah. Yeah.
If everything in your life is shit, if you just do that,
you feel 10 times
better. You solve 80% of the problem. You know, I saw that on Stutz, but like, it's so
Stutz
true.
Stutz was amazing.
Stutz is fantastic.
Stutz was great. Stutz was got me back into like everything, by the way.
Really?
Goosebumps. It got me back into like thinking about myself, you know, how vulnerable I am, like all this stuff. I've done some workshops as well. So that was a very big, just watching that, I'm like, oh, okay. Now I have tools. Now there's things I can do, things I can affect.
Yeah.
Jay, Habibi, I want to say thank you so much,
you,
bro. For coming
so
on the show.
This, it was so
this
nice.
Has been an absolute pleasure. I wanted to have you on the show for a long time. I'm so happy we got to do
Me
it.
Too.
If anyone wants to work with you, reach out with you, find you, what's the best place to get in touch?
Yeah, so you can, my favorite is Instagram to use. So it's just jay.abo, jabo with a full stop in the middle. If you want to email booking requests or whatever, it's jabomusic@gmail.com. And yeah, that's it. That's where
it.
You can reach me.
That's how you can reach him, guys.
yeah.
Terms and conditions apply. Yeah. Jay Habibi, thank you so much, guys. You know how to reach him. It's jay.abo on Instagram. Please make sure to like, share, and follow and subscribe to the podcast at Hope It Helps Pod. And as always, guys, hope it helps.
Hope it helps.
Peace.